Chris Raymer. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And we're back. We got 30 or 40 minutes maybe. We could answer some questions. I know some of you, if, you know, may want to do that. And again, we want to remind everybody, we're not speaking with any authority from up here. It's just our experience. And you're free to agree or disagree. But, you know, if you've got some questions that you'd like to ask, we'll try to make it as brief as possible. And maybe one of us can give you an answer to that that you might want to take home and consider. That's my sponsor always asks me, Chris, go sit with it. Go consider it. See if it rings true with the disciplines of these steps. And that's what I try to do. So we always try to keep an open mind. So if any of y'all would like to ask a question, you just kind of be loud enough so we can hear it. We'll repeat it for the tape, and then we'll try to give you our answers. And if we don't have anybody that wants to ask questions, we go smoke. You know, that's the way it is. Wait, any question? How about you?
What is meditation to you, and how do you go about it?
What is meditation to me, and how do I go about it? Answer that phone. Hold my calls. If that's my wife, I'm here. One of the hardest things for alcoholics and addicts to do is to meditate. Prayer is talking to God. Meditation is listening to God. And I believe that this whole thing is about power. And we're going to try to get some guidance from God. So what I need to do is sometime during the day, I need to get quiet so that I can hear God's word. My experience is that God doesn't compete with the television. You know, God doesn't compete with the traffic. I hear people all the time, I meditate on the way to work. No, you don't. The idea is to practice the discipline, truly, of 10, 11, and 12, around the 11th step, is to get quiet and focus your mind so that you can get some clarity here. We had a lot of people in AA talk about I want to meditate so I can leave my body and go someplace else. What I want to do is get quiet so that any guidance that comes in, I may hear some words in meditation, get quiet, and all of a sudden I think about somebody I hadn't thought about in 20 years. It's like, that's God saying, buddy, you ought to try to track this person down. Maybe that person needs some help, or maybe that person's got a job for me to do, or something of that nature. God communicates to us, folks. I mean, this higher power that wants us happy, joyous, and free is going to communicate with us if we will shut up long enough to let it happen. And it takes discipline to do, because when I get quiet, especially when I was early in recovery, I would get quiet and then the little voices would all wake up. Hey, you're a worthless piece of shit. Yeah, I know. All these little conversations we got, you know, and God damn, did you see her? You know, and then it's like, and then all the distractions. And I've got to get with some practice on it. The discipline means I've got to practice it on a regular basis. So in the mornings, I make sure in the evenings, I'm usually 100 miles an hour. But in the mornings, by myself, I get out in the back by my garden and get quiet. No phones, no TV, no nothing. And say, God, that's my prayer, folks. God, what do you got for me today? No these thous, no long-winded, bless this, help me with this. But God, thy will be done. What do you got for me today? And then I get quiet. You'd be amazed. I could sit here and tell you stories right now of the times that I've done that. And in that meditation, got guidance. It seemed weird. Like, what was that about? But I write it down. I always have a little piece of paper next to me and a pen, and I write it down. And it may not make any sense to me today, but tomorrow, oh, that's what it meant. You'll follow us? There's some great books out there. Wally Key's got a book called How to Listen to God. It was written through a lot of archival information from AA of the old days. How to Listen to God. And I can hook you up with it if you're interested. We sell them at the hospital. That answer your question? You want to add to that? I just want to add one quick thing. I've never worked with a meditation student that didn't get frustrated and irritated by the process of meditation. We were talking to a guy just a minute ago, you must practice meditation in the same way that you would practice the guitar if you wanted to learn how to play the guitar or a foreign language. I mean, you have to just make the commitment to do it and then make it important enough in your life to make it a priority. Remember that old thing in AA, our priorities are what we do, not what we say. Everybody says how important AA is until you ask them to go do some 12-step work, and then they go, oh, you mean this Friday? I can't this Friday. So. And it's the same thing with this thing about meditation. There's 200 or 300 people here right now, and everybody wants to meditate. And yet, when it comes time to actually making the discipline to sit down and get quiet and still and practice that, see, it gets a little grindy on this stuff. And so, what I'm going to tell you is, expect it to be frustrating. I'm assuming that nobody in here meditates. Okay, please, and I'm assuming a great deal. I know most of you have, but. Assume, know going in that you're going to be frustrated with the process. Know going in that in the beginning it's going to be, we're trying to train our body to be still, and our bodies don't want to be still. We've trained it to be active from the time we were little bitty kids. And so it takes some doing. For some of us it may take a week or two. Some of us may take a lifetime. 6 months from now, if you're still struggling with meditation, keep doing it. Because everything that you can benefit from this stuff, I couldn't begin. We could talk for 3 hours about the benefits of this meditation. He needs to be starting right now with that meditation stuff. That's it. That's all I got. Who else? Yes, sir. No. Please, no. The question was, do I have to do a 10th step before I can do the 11th step? Make sure that you understand this. This was a tough one for a lot of people to understand, including me. The steps were in order for a purpose, but we're given the permission at step 10 to begin doing. It's like, I need all of this power to do the amends process in 9, right? And the power comes from this being plugged in. All the juju comes from 10, 11, and 12. You show me a man that waits to get all of his amends done before he starts doing 10, and I'll show you a man that's going to struggle mightily. It's horrible. The moment that you finish your 6 and 7 step stuff and you begin making that 8 step amends list, begin working in 10, 11, and 12 so that the necessary growth will perpetuate itself, so you'll have what you need to do the work. You bet. There's no step out there in this work that is abused more than that 10 step stuff. If we had everybody committed to calling their sponsors when they screwed up and doing what the 10th step asked us to do, I guarantee we'd have a lot less people floundering in this thing. There's huge amounts of freedom around this concept of dealing with your day-to-day wreckage in a 10th step. Is that clear? Okay. Okay. Peter.
I'm an alcoholic. I have a 10-step partner. He's not my sponsor, but we made a pact to call each other every day. I call him, and sometimes he calls me. We share our intimate secrets with each other.
Peter says he's got a 10-step sponsor, a 10-step pal that he does his back and forth with his 10-step stuff. Accountability is accountability, and I see no problem with it, with that perspective on it. I can tell you, if I was your sponsor, I would be concerned about that concept because I'd be feeling like I was out of the loop and I needed to be in the loop to see what you were doing, but that's just a personal piece of it. Some of that... Okay, some of this comes because I know you too. I want to stay really in that loop. Anybody else? Yes, sir. The blue shirt. Hey, buddy. If I'm understanding this question, and I think that I am, that in a situation where you have a man that you've been working with and he goes back out, what is our stance on calling this guy back and seeing what's going on? And is that kosher or not? my answer, and Chris may disagree with this thing, but as a general rule, I believe that we ought to make every effort to get our guys back into this deal when they flounder. There could be all kinds of reasons why he's not coming back. And so I believe in a courtesy call. I believe in picking up a telephone and calling the chap and saying, hey, buddy, what's cooking, man? We miss you. Is everything okay in your life? And give this guy a chance to say what's going on. It may be that he just got enough distance away from our program that he felt alienated again. And as you all well know, I mean, we'll isolate like that. Given the chance, I'd rather be hiding down there in the bathroom than being right here. I just don't want to be around a bunch of people. And your new guys are that times 10, you see? And if they get a little distance away from you, they'll drift. And if you don't pull them back, so call them. I wouldn't hound them, but I'd certainly give him a chance to know that he's loved and that we need him here in this room helping us carry this message. Yeah. Chris, you want to do? Yes, sir.
There's something that happened some days ago. This guy at Spalton, 3 months over to recover, went to this meeting and he didn't see any big book at the meeting, so he pulled out this paper, and this paper about all his time, and shared about how he recovered. And after that meeting, two older members of that group, one being dry 17 years, came up to him and almost physically manhandled this newly sober guy for talking about recovery. What should you do about an issue like that?
Comes back, yes. Did y'all hear what he said? A little guy brought a big book into a meeting. There weren't any big books in there. He brought a big book into the meeting, was holding it up, and he was sharing how he recovered out of the big book. After the meeting, a couple of guys that had been sober a long time got around him and suggested, this is a nice word, suggested that he not do that. I cannot tell you how many times I've been asked to not talk about the big book in a meeting. And here's what we're saying, guys. There's a lot of people out there in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, in our fellowships of Cocaine Anonymous, but they're not in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they're staying sober in the fellowship, and that's a cool thing, but for the real alcoholic, they may not survive. The fellowship will not keep us sober. The program will keep us sober. And so the problem is this newcomer is taking heat because he's doing what he's supposed to be doing. And my deal today, and I'm going to talk about it in the morning when I share my story, for every one of you in this room that carried a big book into a meeting and stood for the message, you have my absolute undying admiration. You need to understand that on a spiritual path, this is in spiritual doctrine, in all religions, if you're on a spiritual path, you will take persecution. If you stand for truth, if you stand for God, for the spiritual way of life, you will take persecution. You will be the brunt of jokes. You will be ostracized. People will talk behind your back. That's just the way it is. But I get a chance to make the decision. See, because the spiritual path is going to lead me to an absolute perfect existence in my own skin on this earth today. It's about standing for something. Y'all know that little "I am responsible" plaque that we see in Alcoholics Anonymous? Every AA group, you see it. It's in a lot of "I am responsible." When the hand of AA reaches out, buddy, somebody better be there. And those of us that are standing in the trench, they're waiting. You're going to take shots because we're not all on the same page. They're not. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm just saying they're not on the same page we are. And you can buckle under and play it their way. And experience the consequences, which is inebriation, drunkenness, irritable, restless, discontent, spiritual malady, or you can stand for something and try to do what we've been talking about all day long. Find the fellowship that you crave. Find other men and women that love God, that understand our responsibilities, and power them. You don't have to turn your back on those other cats. Maybe they'll come around when they see you, but don't back down. Keep bringing the big book. Keep talking out of the literature, because that is the only message that we have to carry. Message in the big book. Thank you, Chris. Yeah. Who else? How about you?
By the grace of God, we have another microphone, so we can hear you. I'm coming right away.
Absolutely. When I grow up, I want to look just like him. That is him. No, I'm done. That's classy son gun. I get it. Go ahead.
I'm an alcoholic.
All right. Is it on?
How do you confront a double agent? By calling it a double agent. I mean, a guy who says there's no such thing as a real alcoholic. And he's sitting with you. What do you do?
Don't argue with a fool. That's what Myra said. Say, okay, well, y'all understand that. Our fellowship, if you're a newcomer, you need to understand. So we walk into this room and we think, oh, isn't this great? We have all these alcoholics in here. But the truth of the matter is, there are a lot of people in this room that are not alcoholic. They can call themselves an alcoholic, but they're not the real McCoy. Like the book talks about on page 21. It talks about the moderate drinker, the hard drinker, who has a little trouble with it, but eventually gets it. But what about the real alcoholic? Those are Bill Wilson's words. What about the real alcoholic? The cat that's going to die if he doesn't get spiritually connected. You follow us? These are the cats that we hear in the meetings talking about, well, I got up this morning and chose not to drink. Oh, how nice for you. You know, it's like, I can't do that. I can get up this morning and choose to stay on a spiritual path with you. Continue to do the work. That's a choice I make. But I don't choose to stay sober. Can y'all understand the difference? It's a very narrow difference, but you got to be able to get your little mind around that. If I can choose to stay sober, we talked about it earlier, I'm not a real alcoholic. That's the deal. And people, they get offended by that. I'm 17 years sober, folks. I didn't get up this morning and choose to stay sober. I got up in this morning to pray and meditate, puke, because I knew I was going to come talk here. You with us? And then,
thank you, Jerry.
You're welcome. That's how you go. How about you, sir? Who's got the mic?
You.
My name is Rob, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi. Next.
Chris. If people come into the fellowship, and I know you work out three steps really, really quickly, and there's still like antidepressants and things like that, do you still take them through the program, even though they stop drinking, they're still on antidepressants?
Yes.
Even though they're powerless over antidepressants?
That's not necessarily true. Let's talk about it in a minute, okay? Did y'all hear the question? Because it's a huge issue in the fellowship, and that's up to you if you want to work with somebody. The question was, do I continue to sponsor or do the work with people who have been medically placed on antidepressants? I don't work with people that are taking sleeping pills. Ambien. You're with us? Sleeping pills just to help you sleep. But people that are clinically depressed and have been placed on those pills by a doctor, I need to remember that I'm not a doctor. You with me? I've never walked a day in it. My experience was I was taking about 5 or 6 pills a day when I got sober. 2 separate antidepressants. When I had my spiritual experience a couple of weeks after I had started doing the work, the obsession lifted and also the depression lifted. And with a doctor's care, I weaned myself with a doctor, and it's my sponsor, people around, I took myself off all of that medication. And so today, I don't take any medication other than occasional aspirin. How cool for me to be able to do that. But there are some people out there, especially some of our brothers and sisters in Cocaine Anonymous, who have fried their brains. And they may have to take those antidepressants. They may have to. I know people, in fact, I could name the name and all of you know who I'm talking about. I know there's people in the fellowship that says if you're taking antidepressants, you're not sober. I'm saying that's pretty damn arrogant. That's pretty damn arrogant. Folks, I've sponsored schizophrenics before. You know, sometimes you didn't know who you were talking to, but hell, you know, they got sober. I've, I'm going to tell this cat who's finally stable for the first time, don't take those medications because they're medications. It's like, wait, this guy will die if he didn't take those medications. We've seen a lot of people in the fellowship stop taking the antidepressants because they've been browbeaten by the fellowship and who ended up committing suicide. Shame on us for trying to play doctor. I only know one way to play doctor. And if my wife ever hears this tape, it's not the girls at the coffee bar I'm talking about. Who else had a question? This gentleman right here? Go ahead.
Yeah, I've been on the spectrum of California and Virginia now.
Welcome.
I wanted you to ask our Danish brothers and sisters, do they have the promises to use them in the meetings?
That's a great question. He's asking from the States. Do y'all here in Denmark or over in this area use the promises in your meetings?
Do you use the two sentences further up the page that says the spiritual life is not a theory, we have to live it? I brought that one back into Virginia from my home group, original home group, down in Louisiana. It lent a strong spiritual message because it starts off with spirit. If we're thinking about this stage of our development, what phase? The spiritual life is not a theory, we have to live it. So,
welcome.
May I suggest that you use a little more strength?
Yeah.
With those two things, they just a third of the way down to the top, right together.
I bet you they cuss them in the room. Who else? The wandering mic is passing by. Chris.
Hi. Chris, you were talking before about taking inventory, just getting a tent made over the tent out of the way. I've been needing to go back to basics for just off my own room. And I got asked by someone about this on page 73. They took inventory, right? Lovely, lovely, lovely. Until they told someone else all in italics their life story. Mm-hmm. I didn't really know how to answer that question, but I can't say who I tell all of my life story to. Is that a sponsor's responsibility to hear that?
Did you hear the question? Because it's a mix up in the deal. We're not going to get over this thing called drinking until we tell somebody all of our life story. Folks, what this means is we don't need to hear the little minutiae. And then I moved to Burma and was there for about 6 months. And then I moved someplace and nobody gives a rat's ass. It's got nothing to do with anything. What it does is if you've got some stuff going on in your life that needs to be talked about to another human being, our secrets are what kills us. We're talking a little bit different from the resentments. Our secrets. If you've done something that you're feeling guilty over, and you're blocked from the sunlight of the spirit because of that shame and that guilt, and you don't tell somebody that, see, here's the deal. You need to talk to somebody, even if they're not your sponsor. You need to let somebody know what's going on. The four steps too often is thought of to be confession. Four steps, not the fifth step, is not confession. We're going to tell somebody what's going on, but we're going to try to find some truth out about that. If confession was all we needed to do was tell somebody all the weird stuff we did, the Catholics would have a much better success rate in recovery. You get that? Not knocking that at all. I'm just saying confession alone is not enough. That's why we got to get down and we got to do the column. Look at our part in the fourth column. Make sense? We don't want to leave out those little dark secrets that we've been hanging on to. It's two separate parts of the book, and they're talking about two separate things. I understand exactly where you're at with it. Our story is important, but everybody wants to get into it. It's that in telling the whole story, it's those little secrets that are getting us. Let me give you an example. If I cheated on my wife, and the guilt around that was driving me crazy, you with me? And okay, who am I resentful at here? At myself. It talks about there on the pages. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. So my name needs to go on that inventory list. I just need to make sure that I deal with that dishonesty. You with us? Against that woman. Because that's the stuff that's going to block me from the sunlight of the Spirit. All ends up in a resentment inventory. But I don't have to get you all the stupid, sordid details about why I got into that relationship and running into this and this and the other. I mean, a lot of you guys are sitting down doing fifth steps that are 10 hours long, 12 hours long. This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. If you will narrow this down to exactly what we're supposed to be looking at, the root resentment, man, a fifth step will last a couple of hours. 2-3 hours, boom, for a new one. You're down the road. You'll follow us? This is not about confession. It is not about confession. With me?
Okay.
Stop asking those hard questions. I should have known that. These English guys, you know, they lay awake at night trying to figure out how to fuddle us up. You and answer.
My name is Sam.
Where are you at?
I'm
sorry.
I was thinking about when I came into the fellowship, there was a very strong movement in my hometown where we did, we worked the steps in 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
You think that could be bad in a way? What do you think about that?
No.
Can you think?
No, I don't. I think if you've got somebody clear in the head, past detox, trying to work the steps with somebody that's drooling, you know, sometimes it's difficult. You know, that they're all detox, they're all medicated, they're not really clicking. But once you get the physical piece taken care of, I think the sooner we get this work done, the better. You know, I wish I could remember that quote. It's in Bristol Fashion over in England, and it's in a little masthead. It talks about this. You know, we've seen a lot of people try and play with this program and leave it undo, but we don't see people not get sober that actually work the program. You know, Back to Basics talks about working them in 4 or 5 days. It's an absolutely doable deal. I've done it in the fast. I've come to conferences like this and worked steps with people before. It's not that difficult, guys. I'm telling you, it's not rocket science. We're asking some questions, we're transmitting some information, and then we're going on down the road. You guys get this mixed up with therapy. You cats get this mixed up with therapy. AA is not therapy. I mean, tomorrow morning, that's all I'm going to talk about. Y'all need to understand, I almost died believing that AA was therapy. That I could come into these rooms and all of my little chicken shit problems were going to get solved. That's just not true. You with me? Alcoholics Anonymous got me connected to God. It's funny watching her. She's translating up here. How do you translate chicken shit? It's okay. Sure. Is that? Absolutely. That's the hook you wanted out. There you go. You got it. Everybody's different.
Ready, alcoholic. I wanted to ask you about the sleeping pills.
Mm-hmm.
If a person's never been addicted to pills, not using them like every day just to get them a bit weird, just simply using them non-stop for 3 days. So if you can't sleep for 3 days,
mm-hmm.
you don't sleep for 4 or 5 days, you get a bit wicked in your head. Mm-hmm. So what are you supposed to do then?
Don't take them. Here's... This is from my experience working in a treatment center, okay, and trying for 7-8 years to get sober and not be able to get sober. My mind will always go to something that will fix what's wrong with me. The sleeping pills will make me sleep. They will also treat this spiritual malady. But while they're doing that, they will trigger this phenomenon called craving that we talked about. And my experience is you can take sleeping pills for a period of time, some of us, and get away with it, but it'll eventually... every time lead you back to your drug of choice. This is my experience, guys. I don't know of one single exception to that rule. You take a pill, continue to take it, it will eventually lead you back to the cocaine. Or it will eventually lead you back to the alcohol. That's that cross-addiction piece we talk about in treatment so much. And that's as real as it comes. I can't put anything in my body that changes the way I feel. Here's the problem with the sleep. If I'd have taken sleep medication 2 nights ago when I first got here, taken a sleeping pill, I tell you, I would feel a lot better than I feel today. I haven't slept in 3 days. I mean, I'm jet lagged, kicks my butt. You follow me? But I would have talked in the morning, possibly drunk. That's my experience. When I eat the pills, I go back. My body will gradually reset itself. Nobody's ever died from lack of sleep. And if you stay up long enough, your body will cycle back around, pick yourself back up again, and you'll start sleeping on a regular basis. Maybe it's because you're drinking too much damn coffee. You know, maybe it's because you haven't done any exercise in 6 months. You with us? I mean, all of these things figure into absolute wholeness of health. And that's what we see a lot of times. The quicker, softer ways, let me just eat a pill and fix this. Makes sense?
Yes. I also wanted to ask about alternative medicines, like this herbal stuff that you can get.
Mm-hmm.
That are completely illegal, and my dad is helping to sleep.
I understand pot's legal here too. You know, why don't you just go smoke a joint? I mean, it's just... I would just be careful, hon. I would just be careful. I've got a real good friend of mine who relapsed around herbal. Like, you know what Viagra is? When your little pee-pee don't work? Yeah. Eating an herbal sexual male enhancement thing, and it triggered the phenomenon of craving. And he had about 6 months of sobriety and went back out. Over that, it changed something, triggered that phenomenon of craving. It hardwires in. That stuff comes from the midbrain. It doesn't come from the thinking part. It's midbrain. It's you're locked in. And it, when it happens, you just go do it. It's just not worth the risk for me. Make sense? Just get with your sponsor on it and see. Who's got the mic?
My name is John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, buddy.
Thank you for coming on to share this. I was just wondering, Miles, if it's important for me to walk up to a newcomer and tell him that I want to sponsor him, instead of waiting for somebody to walk up to me and ask him to sponsor him.
How come I got the hard ones to get those? That is such a good question, and it comes up so often in sponsorship. If you're very active at all, it'll come up. If it hadn't happened to you yet, I guarantee you it will. Some cat walks in, and you zero in on him, and you go, "That's my guy," and you go over there. I have found that if I'm not careful, I will circumvent God's will in the deal, and it's my arrogance that says that I'm the best man to sponsor him. And I think that I know that. I think probably a better tact would be. I'm going to go over, as the moment he gets there, I'm going to go over and introduce myself, and I'm going to make sure he knows where the coffee is. I'm going to make sure he knows where the bathrooms are. I'm going to make sure he knows where the predators in the group are. I'm going to make sure that he knows all of the things that are important to his comfort there. And then I'm going to back up a little bit. And then I might ask him if he has picked a sponsor yet, if he's done, you know, where he is in the big picture. And then just see what happens. And usually what will happen is, since you're the only guy in the room that showed him any love and any care, he'll walk up and say, "You know, I really need a sponsor." And I don't believe in temporary sponsors. It drives me nuts when people at a treatment place that says, "I need a temporary sponsor." I said, "Well, great, go find one. I don't want to do this," because people have a tendency to start. People started doing this thing called auditing sponsors, and they have a spiritual sponsor and a money sponsor and a this kind of deal. And pretty soon, you have all of these guys that you're manipulating with your stories, and nobody has the whole piece of the puzzle. Everybody has just little parts of it like this. And so, if you're giving me the responsibility to be your sponsor, by golly, we're joined at the hip, and I know everything about you, brother, and you know everything about me, and we're going to work through this work. And it's an absolutely marvelous experience. It's just the coolest. But let God have a say in it. Let God come and direct that choice, and I think you'll be more pleased with who you end up with. Cool? Thanks, buddy. Anybody else have any more questions? I don't know how much time we have left on this thing. I hope somebody's paying attention to it.
We have about 10 to 15 minutes left, but if you want to call it earlier, just say something.
That's okay. Anybody else have anything? If not...
Nicholas, what's next?
Yes.
Hey, my name is Nicholas Mandori. This one makes me nervous. I don't know if it makes you nervous. It's group us in two groups. Real alcoholics, as I am, and false alcoholics. Who shall judgment if I don't think everybody is real alcoholics? How I find out who's false alcoholics?
Read the book.
It's a great question. And did all of you guys understand this stuff? There seems to be some discomfort, some uncomfortable stuff about trying to determine who is the real alcoholic and who is not the real alcoholic. It's not my responsibility to judge a man's alcoholism or not. It's not my place to sit here in judgment of whether you are or whether you aren't. The book is painfully clear in several places how we're going to qualify somebody. The very best that I can think of off the top of my head, page 45, the chapter 4, we agnostics. There's a paragraph there. Read the paragraph. The only thing that the reason we mentioned this week is because I think that it's imperative for everybody that walks our path to understand that not everybody that walks through the door with that circle and triangle on it is like we are. There are other people that are there, and it's important to understand that from the day that you first get there, because the solutions that are talked about are different. You understand that, I think. But you're right. In the States, in the group that my home group, we have nothing but open meetings. All of our meetings are book studies. And we have them open for that particular reason, because I want the new man that comes in that's questioning what's going on to have an opportunity to shake the thing out and look at it, and I'm going to help him make the decisions. I'm not going to let him flounder. If I look like I got a guy sitting in our meeting that's lost, that does not seem to be connecting, the language of the heart that these guys is not there, then this guy may be hiding out in our fellowship. He may not be the real deal. I'm not saying something to him to make him feel uncomfortable. It is not my place to make this man feel badly. But it is my place to ask him a few questions and see if I can help him see his truth, so that perhaps he needs another fellowship. Perhaps he needs some therapy. Perhaps he just needs something else. And I'm supposed to be the one that's healthy in the deal. And it's my job as a healthy member of Alcoholics Anonymous to take some responsibility to try to help him see where he needs to be. And if we discover that he is a cocaine addict, I'm going to try to help him get plugged into a CA meeting where he can be of people of like mind doing what CA guys do. You see, that's my part of my job. Did that answer your question? I do understand your concern. It's really important. Sure. We okay? Yeah.
My name is Kumar Malitz.
Hey.
I'm doing steps to get back to basic. I've done a 4-step. I have 5 resentments. You see, people are pissing off at work, people are pissing off on the street. I'm not going back to that group. I'm supposed to make amends to people in step 9, back to basics. I don't think I need to make amends because I haven't harmed them.
You want to take that, buddy? You hear that track click, set? We've been here a couple of days sharing some stuff, and some of the stuff we've shared seems real controversial to you. But I'm fixing to answer you. You guys are absolutely free to agree or disagree with. I want to remind you of that, okay? I see this all the time. I have some people out there that I have flat raked over the coals, that I have hurt. And I need to go make amends to those people. We have seems to have a little thread in our fellowship of people. We call them amends makers. They're always, they're feeling kind of down and they're kind of bored. And so they go, well, I'm going to go make some amends. Because you know how good you feel after you make an amend to somebody? And so they'll go, and I get them all the time. Chris Raymer, when I first met you, I hated your guts. But I realize where you're coming from now, and I just want to make amends for hating your guts. And we're okay now, right? No. 10 minutes ago, we were perfect. Because I didn't know anything about that. But now, you with me? Now, we really have a problem. You with me? It's like, guys. I have enough things to make amends for without having to dream up something. 10 years ago, I said something nasty about your tits. And well, I just really would like to... Please. No. I'm not going to make amends for stuff I've thought about. Guys, there are times in my sobriety when I've been driving down the roads, if you could see what was going on in my head. I'm psychotic. I'm figuring out how I'm going to chop you up and put you in a little bag, and I'm going to go make amends for that? They'd lock me up. I'm going to ask God to take my thought life to a different place. And I'm going to ask that God heal me, because I'm the nutcase that's having trouble here. You know? And I'm not going to include you in that category. Yeah, that's nuts. Guys, there's good, and then there's good. I mean, this is ridiculous. You know? Who else? Anybody else?
My name is Anton, I'm Holly. Talk about taking steps fast. Some of us have the, especially in Denmark, we have this system of working steps called the Durban system or something like that. Mm-hmm. I follow weeks to that also. It takes a long time. How do you sponsor the guys? Because I wasn't brought up, you know, I wasn't brought up that way by my sponsor to do it fast. How do you do it, you know? How do I change the system, you know, so I can do it fast instead of dragging the ass for a year long?
They're just wearing me down. You know, I don't care how you do it. Just go ahead and do it. Here's the deal, guys. It's like our brothers and sisters in Narcotics Anonymous too. In their textbook, they take time to work the steps, a long time. My experience from spending years taking my time to do it, but never quite finishing it, to finally just doing it. And getting to a different spot with God was so amazingly life-changing for me. And so that's the only thing I can do. That's the only thing I have to offer is my experience. There's probably a lot of people staying sober doing it that way. And I'm saying, for the cat who's... Don't understand it. Alcoholism and drug addiction is progressive. If y'all could see up here from my perspective, I mean, we have some very young people in here over here. And we have... This, I don't know how old he is. I don't know. He's just old. 74. You see, but can you tell my little brother from the, you can't tell at 74 years old how far his disease has progressed. See, alcoholism progresses whether you're drinking or not. You think your disease stops when you stop drinking. It doesn't. It continues to progress. So some people early on in their disease, maybe they can take long times to work the steps and they're successful with that. My experience with people who are very far advanced in this disease, we have a little very narrow window. It's called God's grace. You know, when the dust settles a little bit and the head kind of slows down for a second and you've got a little window where things are feeling pretty good. Some of you disrespectful buckaroos want to call it a pink cloud. I don't talk about pink clouds. It's God's grace. It's a little free time that we can maneuver and not fight that obsession. But it's not going to stay there. It will be fleeting. For some of you, it lasts for months. For some of you, only a few days. We've got a window of opportunity where we can work with that person, keep him motivated and getting connected to that God so he can have some permanent sobriety. If we miss that window, we're all bets are off. I don't care how long you take. You're not going to stay sober. Make sense? That's the best answer I can give you. Good stuff. Don't bug the system.
One more question. And then afterwards, I have a few messages.
Ah.
My name is Kevin, I'm a comic. Chris, more and more people are getting coming to Alcoholics Anonymous from treatment centers. And if they were to share about their addiction, would you stop them sharing in your meeting? And also about the protection of a primary purpose and the desire to stop drinking. You know, if the addict is in denial of alcoholism, but is in an AA meeting, and wanting this, his solution to his addiction, how would you go about it?
Good question. Did y'all hear the question? This is rampant in this fellowship. It's extremely controversial. But we have these things called the traditions that are pretty clear cut. Alcoholics Anonymous is for alcoholics. If you happen to be a drug addict and an alcoholic, that's great. But the blue card that was established in the early 80s states specifically that we talk about our problems with alcohol. My job as a recovered alcoholic is to help that cat, exactly what Myers was talking about, to qualify him and help him. And if he's in the wrong room, I don't say, you need to get out of here. What I need to say is, buddy, we've got some wonderful, wonderful fellowship called Cocaine Anonymous that started in 1982, Narcotics Anonymous in 1953. These are wonderful fellowships. Pills Anonymous, maybe let me help you get connected to that fellowship. We are not here to treat every problem in the world. I mean, truly, we're not. We're here to help folks overcome their problems with alcohol. We're not trying to be exclusive. If that happens to also be one of your problems, you're so welcome. You're so welcome. Does that make sense? Bless you. It's a wonderful deal. Do we have one more? Are you ready? Kaput. To me. Bye-bye.
Klokken er nu 4:30. Vi holder en halv times pause frem til 5:00, hvor Jes fra København kommer og holder gammel dansk speak. Og derefter kommer Alicia N. fra Texas og snakker til os. Og det var det. Tak for i dag. Tak for mig. Ja, tak for nu.